I'm very happy to have the opportunity to present the lesson this morning. I know all of us are happy that Brother Seth will be back this week. We'll be anxious to hear all about his work, and I know it'll be very encouraging to everybody. Proverbs 31:9 says, "Plead the cause of the poor and the needy." Bible, of course, has a great deal from beginning to end. It has a lot to say about the poor and the obligations of individuals to help the poor, but also the obligations of the church. To use the contribution, as Romans 15:26 says, "For the poor among the saints." W.E. Vine, I'm sure that some of you, maybe most of you, have this dictionary or have access to it, but he says, "The poor are constantly the subjects of injunctions to assist them." So I think it's very appropriate for us to examine this morning what the scriptures say about the subject. No one would question this. God has blessed us richly, not only supplying all of our needs, but also many conveniences, luxuries. He blesses us so that we will be a blessing to others. As Paul says in Ephesians 4:28, not only to provide our needs, but also to help others who have need. God is merciful. Here's a word that we find throughout the Bible, and it has an application in this. He's merciful, and he wants us to be, as Ephesians 5:1 says, be imitators of God. Be like God. Be merciful as God is merciful. With a compassionate heart and benevolent hand. I'd like for us to take just a moment to look at the Bible description of the poor. A lot of discussion about, well, you know, who's poor and who's not poor. Well, let's let the Bible describe Bible terms. That's what we're always telling our liberal brethren, and we tell our sectarian friends. Let the Bible define Bible terms. So, when we quote Romans 15:26, ministering to the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem, let's let the Bible tell us about the poor. Leviticus 25:25, the poor had possessions to sell. If one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possession, and if his redeeming relative comes to redeem it, then he may redeem what his brother sold. Leviticus 14:21, the poor man could offer a lamb. Maybe he couldn't offer all that the law specified for the sacrifice, but he could offer a lamb and does. Leviticus 14:21, if he's poor, cannot afford it, then he shall take one male lamb as a trespass offering and two turtle doves or two pigeons, such as he is able to afford. Leviticus 19:10, he could glean. You shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. And of course, they had to work. They had to go out and work and do that gleaning. I'm the Lord your God. The Bible doesn't say that there were some poor people who were not poor enough to glean. Or they were poor and couldn't even offer turtle doves and so forth. We're just looking at what the Bible actually says. It describes poor people. Again, Leviticus 25:35-40, he could work. The poor man could work as a hired servant if he was sold. One of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. as a hired servant and sojourner, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. So, we don't have to be rocket scientists to understand the word poor. Let's just let the Bible define it and avoid quibbling over just how poor one has to be in order to be called poor. I think that's just a way of saying, I don't really want to help them. Yeah, they're not poor enough. All right, we don't need to do that. The word poor simply does not mean totally washed out, totally burned out. It doesn't mean destitute. It doesn't mean devastated. Doesn't mean indigent. Like Webster said, just a simple word, poor is the simple, direct term for one who lacks the resources for reasonably comfortable living. Poor. That's it. That's it. We ought to accept that. Now, it's true that laziness can produce poverty, like the Bible said. But by no means can it be said that it's the cause of the poverty of Christians. If it were, the Holy Spirit would not have ordered the collections among the churches to minister to the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. It's understood, like 2 Thessalonians 3:10, if a man won't work, neither let him eat. Well, that's understood. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about responsible people, but who have become poor. God expects Christians to be concerned for the poor, especially their poor brethren. Now, there's no argument there. The scriptures are too plain. We cannot be indifferent toward our brethren who are poor. Proverbs 14:21, he who has mercy on the poor, happy is he. Proverbs 22:9, he who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor. Job 30:25, has not my soul grieved for the poor? That was a sign of Job's integrity. Psalm 41:1, blessed is he who considers. Here's a key word. Blessed is the man who considers the poor. And the margin in my Bible for the word poor says sick, weak. And verse 3, languishing. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. So, what is the opposite of considering the poor? Poor brethren. What's the opposite? Ignore them. Hide our eyes. Turn a deaf ear to their appeal for help. Be indifferent toward them. That's the opposite of considering them. It's easy, you know, to criticize the priest and the Levite of Luke 10:31-32, who he saw the wounded man and he passed by on the other side of the road. But that's exactly what we do. When we ignore their appeals for help, I'm talking about our brethren, we hide our eyes and turn a deaf ear to the appeal of churches to help the poor among the saints in many parts of the world. We're doing just what the priest and the Levite did. What's the difference? Very same thing. You know, this is a common thing. The Bible talks about it. But people tend to, you know, kind of look down on poor people. Proverbs 14:20, the poor man is hated, even by his neighbor. Now, the rich has many friends. Proverbs 19:4, wealth makes many friends. But the poor, he's separated from his friend. Did you ever hear of anybody that was ashamed of their poor relatives? Kind of didn't want to admit that, you know, they're my kin folks. They're my relatives. You know, poor house and shabbily dressed and an old rattletrap truck and so forth. All the brothers of the poor hate him. That means despise. How much more do his friends go far from him? He may pursue them with words, but they abandon him. Poor relatives, yeah. They're not very important. So they disown them, they shun them, disregard them, they turn a deaf ear to them when they ask for help. They just don't have anything to do with it. Well, I got news for you. We have many poor relatives in Latin American countries. I'm sure this is true of many other countries. But it just so happens that Faye and I are very familiar with Latin American countries. Mexico, Central America, South America, the Caribbean, Spain. They are our brothers and sisters in Christ. They're just as much in need as were the poor among the saints of Jerusalem, Romans 15:26. I don't mean all of them. If you'll notice, it says in Jerusalem, it says the poor among the saints. It didn't say all of them. It said there were poor among them, more than they could take care of. So Macedonia and Achaia and all these churches helped Jerusalem with the poor among them that they couldn't take care of. But frankly, now you may think I'm a hobby writer and or whatever, but I'm stating something that's just a simple fact, that by and large, there are exceptions, but by and large, these poor relatives that we have, brothers and sisters in Latin American countries, are ignored by most of their own brethren in the USA who are so richly blessed by the Lord. Typical church in Texas. They were asked to help certain poor brethren down in Nicaragua. We don't know them. Now, we don't know them. Well, Wayne Partain knows. Well, who's Wayne Partain? You know. So here we go. There's a lot of excuses. There's a lot of ways to excuse ourselves. But the bottom line is, we don't know them. We don't want to know them. We don't care anything about them. We just don't like our poor relatives. As though, and this is what upsets me, as though they were third class. Well, we talk about the third world. Third world, all these poor countries, third world. And as if the Christians were third class Christians in those countries. Now, they're going to heaven. They're our brothers and sisters, and they're going to heaven, but they'll be fenced off. You know, they'll be fenced off from us rich Americans that we don't have to associate with. To minister to the poor among the saints is to minister to Jesus Christ Himself. Somebody in this country might be indifferent toward them, disregarding all of this, but not Jesus. He identifies Himself with them. Proverbs 19:17, he who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord. Imagine that. Lends to the Lord, and he'll pay back what he's given. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine lending to the Lord? Can you imagine having credit? Having credit with the Lord? Lending to the Lord. That's exactly how he feels when we minister to the poor among the saints. This sounds just exactly like Matthew 25:35-46. And as much as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Christ regards what is done for one of his poor brethren as done unto himself. Again in Proverbs 28:27, he who gives to the poor will not lack. But he who hides his eyes will have many curses. So we must not hide our eyes from the poor among the saints. Because if we hide our eyes and turn a deaf ear to them, we're hiding our eyes, turning a deaf ear to Jesus Christ Himself. Brethren, this is serious business. We're here this morning. It's been emphasized in the announcements and in the prayers. We're here to worship God. We're here to honor God. We're here to do the will of God. We want to go to heaven. We don't want to be lost. And Jesus Christ talks about people in that great day, on the judgment day, being on the right hand and the left hand. And He's not talking just about baptism and keeping the Lord's Supper and singing without the instrument. He's saying, I was hungry and thirsty and I was sick and all of this, and You ministered to me. How was that? Inasmuch as You did it to the least of me, these my disciples, my brethren, You did it unto me. So we must not have a careless attitude toward helping our poor brethren, because if they cry, if we ignore their cry, then God will ignore our cry. Have you noticed throughout the ministry of Christ the emphasis, the attention that Christ gave the poor? Luke 4:18. Here's His mission. Here's His ministry. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. Why this special mention of the poor? Special mention of the poor. I think that's very significant. And throughout His ministry, He showed great concern for the poor. Matthew 19:21, He told the rich young ruler that if you want to be perfect, you go and sell what you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. And He didn't say, now be sure, when you sell all your possessions, you be sure now that they're really poor, or that they're poor enough to receive help. Or be sure that there aren't others that are poorer than they are before you help them. He didn't say that. He didn't say that. The word poor is just the word poor. It's throughout the Bible, poor. And like I say, it doesn't take that much of a brain to know what poor means. The Bible doesn't. The Bible doesn't make a whole bunch of specifications. Some brethren are indifferent toward Christians, our brethren, our family, in the third world country, as if they were unimportant. But I want to emphasize this morning, and please remember, that Jesus Christ identified Himself with the least of these my brethren. If they're the least, okay, be it so. But Christ identifies Himself with them. Sound, quotation mark, conservative churches, they don't help the poor among the saints. A lot of times, they ignore their appeals. And we don't help them through sponsoring churches. That's good. We don't help them through church institutions. That's good. But the question is, do they do it at all? Are we going to heaven because of what we don't do? We're going to stand before the Lord. No, we didn't operate through a sponsoring church. We didn't operate through an institution. We didn't do this. Well, what did you do? Nothing. We're going to go to heaven on what we didn't do? Don't think so. Church is taught to use the contribution to minister to the poor among the saints. The following scriptures, every one of them, refer to this Lord's Day contribution. We're not talking about help from individuals. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2, now concerning the collection for the saints. As I've given orders to the churches of Galatia, churches, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, lay by in store, storing up as you may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. Now many scriptures teach us to help the poor as individuals. I'm not discussing that. That's not my primary purpose this morning. But these scriptures that speak of the collection or the contribution are not talking about Christians giving as individuals. Paul plainly says churches. So these texts mean church contribution. We must be careful, in fact, about asking individual members to help the poor among the saints. Because if we give on the Lord's Day as we're prospered and even beyond our ability as the Macedonians, then what we do individually might well come out of our contribution to the church. One brother here told me that it would. And that could cause serious problems. I've been here over a year, and I've had many, many requests for help. Brethren in Latin America, and I've raised thousands of dollars, but I have not asked anybody in this church to do it. Because I know good and well that this could affect our contribution. You say, oh, it wouldn't affect mine. Well, good for you. But it could affect the contribution of some. Now, I'm not going to be involved in that. I'm talking about church contribution. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 is freely quoted to show authority. This morning we've done this because we have authority. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, authority for the contribution on the first day of the week. Rightly so. But regrettably, the purpose of the contribution is ignored. Now, some brethren consider that what was going on back there, that Paul was writing about, that's a very special case. It was a one-time event. And therefore, it's not an example for us. Okay. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 is not a command for us. It's not an example for us. Then we should just forget the Lord's Day contribution altogether. Forget it. We can't have our cake and eat it too. Furthermore, if 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 does not command that the church today send money to help the poor among the saints, then also forget Acts 20 and 7. Now, on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread there in Troas, that was just a one-time thing. That just happened that way. And then we don't have any Bible examples. If we can dismiss one, we can dismiss them all. That was just Troas. Now that just happened on the first day, but it has no meaning for us. So there goes the Lord's Supper on the first day. We might as well just throw the New Testament out the window. It's not for us today. Romans 15, 26, for it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. So this contribution of the churches of Galatia, Macedonia, and Achaia was for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. Now, again, I say, all the saints of Jerusalem were not poor. But there were too many poor among them for the church in Jerusalem to meet their needs, so other churches helped them meet that need. That's the way it works, and that's the pattern. That's the example that the Lord has left us today. Now, are you saying the contribution can't be used for the local church? Of course not. Of course it can be used for the local church. Because we're commanded to assemble, so we've got to have a place to assemble. And for Bible classes. And those that preach should live of the gospel. That implies support from the contribution. But, here's the problem. By no means can this specific purpose, collection for the saints, which is named, it's named explicitly in these scriptures, by no means can it be ignored. That's my point. I'm not minimizing using the contribution for a church building and classrooms and Bible class material and whatever the needs of the local church or the preacher and so forth. That's not the point. But the point of it is that this explicit purpose here in this passage cannot just be dismissed and say, well, that's not convenient, that's not expedient, that's not for us. We got other things to do. That's exactly the way the Baptists treat Acts 2:38. Just exactly. You read Acts 2:38, repent and be baptized. Yes, sir. Yeah, you've got to be baptized. In fact, you can't be a Baptist unless you're baptized. You can go to heaven without being baptized, but you can't be a Baptist. You've got to be baptized. Okay, the rest of the verse says, for the remission of sins. We don't accept that. We don't have that. Ignore the purpose. That's what we do in the contribution. We say, first day of the week, yes, sir. Contribution, yes, sir. Purpose, but for the saints, the poor saints, no, not that. We got other things to take care of. That's dangerous, brethren. That's a dangerous attitude. That's the way we treat 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Church contribution, yes. First day of the week, yes. But for poor Christians in other countries, oh no. No, that can be done individually, but not from the contribution. I want everybody to take this home with you. If chapter 16, 1 and 2 is not a pattern, is not an example, then neither is chapter... What's chapter 11, 23 about? Lord's Supper. Same letter. Same letter. Chapter 16, chapter contribution 16, Lord's Supper 11. Even before you get to the contribution, you got the Lord's Supper. Oh, that's just Corinth. That was good back then. No. That's teaching for us. And so is Acts 20 and 7. And so is chapter 16, 1 and 2. We can ignore one. We can ignore all. 2 Corinthians 8, 1 and 4, moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. What's all this about? Same thing. The contribution on the first day of the week for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. And this is called ministering to the saints. We preach and teach a great deal about serving the Lord and doing good works. Well, here's a prime example of how we do it. We use the contribution to minister to the poor among the saints. And then notice the word fellowship. Our sending money from the contribution to help the poor among the saints is having fellowship with them. That's what motivated the Macedonians. That's why they gave beyond their ability. They wanted to have fellowship with those Christians that were poor in Jerusalem. Notice that the Macedonian churches were eager to do this. They even gave beyond their means to do it. They didn't want to be left out. Paul was urging a little bit of restraint, but they didn't want to be left out. They wanted to have a part in this fellowship. Because of their poverty, they wanted to have a part in it. It strengthens ties with them. 2 Corinthians 9 and 1. Now concerning the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. And again, Paul uses the word ministering to the saints. All these scriptures. 1 Corinthians 16. Romans 15, 26, Galatians 2 and 10, 2 Corinthians 8, 2 Corinthians 9, all of them have to do with the Lord's Day contribution, a collection that's to help the poor among the saints. We use 2 Corinthians 9, 6 and 7, but this I say, that he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will reap bountifully. So let each one of you give its purpose in his heart. What's Paul talking about? Same thing. Look at chapter 9, verse 1. This is in the same chapter. This is often quoted. We quote it to motivate generous giving. But the purpose of the collection that Paul discusses was not for local needs, but to help the poor among the saints. Is that the way we use it? Galatians 2, 9 and 10. They desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I also was eager to do. Are we eager to do this? Notice, brethren, that ministering to the poor is mentioned in connection with going to the Jews and Gentiles with the gospel. That this was related to their having fellowship with each other in the work. So we simply cannot, we must not omit benevolence from the mission or function of a local church. And what I'm saying this morning has to do with one simple point, brethren. I want us to be a New Testament church. I want us to follow the Bible pattern. I want us to do things, to do Bible things in Bible ways and describe Bible terms with Bible explanations. That's all in the world that I'm trying to say. I want us to go to heaven. I'm an evangelist, and I've been in the Spanish work. My wife and I have been in the Spanish work nearly all of our lives. I've been in it 68 years. And when I talk about my brethren in these Latin American countries, I'm not talking through my hat. I know what I'm talking about. I've been there and done that. And I'm not saying that every single church is in need. That's not it. Even in Jerusalem, it said the poor among the saints. But time and time again, these brethren are appealing. They're asking for help. And they are so very grateful. Very grateful. I've raised money just recently for a poor sister in Cuba that had an amputation, and the church there and her son just pleading for help for a wheelchair and basic needs. Another brother in Cuba who has a serious heart condition. And there are members of the church in some cases that actually are reduced to hunger, but that's rare. That is not the greatest need. The greatest need are people who are, like we mentioned earlier in the lesson, that the word poor certainly involves those who are struggling with major health problems, and they don't have Medicaid and Medicare and all kinds of public assistance. They don't have that. You go to anybody, go to the hospital right here in Columbia and be taken care of. That doesn't exist in most of these countries. But anyway, you've listened very attentively. I'm grateful. I know there's a lot of disagreement here, but I don't question my motives. I want us to please God and go to heaven. And that great day, I don't want anybody here on Jesus' left hand for him to say, inasmuch as you didn't do it to me. Because the sentence is absolutely horrible. We're talking about something else. As we close the service and sing the invitation song, we're also talking about another Bible pattern of obeying the gospel. Repenting of sins, coming to confess Jesus Christ and be baptized for the remission of sins, or if you're out of duty and need to come back, we sing this hymn to encourage you to come. Shall we stand, please?